Kate Marie tonight. I'm standing in for her. Just welcoming the members of the credit union tonight, looking forward to the presentation. Before we actually formally commence, we do need a chair for tonight's meeting.
Good.
And I'm looking to councillors here to nominate a chair to allow proceedings to start.
I would propose Councillor Honor Harris, please.
Thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to welcome the members to the meeting. And as I say, we're going to our, I just haven't actually got the agenda up yet, but I'm just going to the first item of the agenda. It would have been apologies, sir, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. With apologies then from Ray Ward, Councillors Lee Surgener, McGuinness, Savage, Owen, Stokes, and Finnegan as well.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I'm just actually going here. And then, I should have had myself ready, but there's an apology from Councillor Pete Byrne as well. Okay, Lord, sir, thank you very much for that. No problem. I have to read out the small print, okay, the introductory remarks. I would like to welcome everybody to the meeting, and hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched up to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any items of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting, and please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. I will remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Take Q if you wish to ask a question or see for comment. I see Councillor Taylor to comment, but I'll let you in a wee minute. Type P if you wish to propose. Type S if you wish to second, and please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via the chat facility so that we are aware of this as an active decision and does not indicate a connectivity problem. So, Councillor Taylor, I see you've got a wee comment there. I'll let you in at this stage.
Chair, just to declare an interest, Chair, I'm a member of the Frontier Credit Union, which is under the Ulster Federation of Credit Unions.
No problem, David. Thanks a million. So with that there, with the declarations of interest and apologies taken care of, we now like to take this opportunity on behalf of Council to welcome the Irish League of Credit Unions to our hybrid meeting here this evening. You're all very welcome, especially extend to Martin, to Carmel and Marianne. You're very welcome to be with us, and we look forward to hearing your presentation at tonight's meeting. So without further ado, I'll hand over to yourselves and look forward to, and as long with the members, with your presentation. So I'll hand over to yourselves.
Thank you, Chair. What I will try and do now is share my screen, subject to any technical difficulties. So hopefully you'll be able to see that. Thank you for the kind invite to come along tonight and speak with yourselves from the Irish League of Credit Unions. I have spoken to Gordon Smith, who's from the Ulster Federation of Credit Unions this morning, and he's given his apologies to yourselves that he's unable to attend this afternoon due to other dietary commitments. But I think we've tried to do these sessions in tandem with each other, and we work quite closely together in terms of representing our credit unions, and so we've a lot in common in that respect. I suppose in terms of tonight's presentations. Again, thank you for the opportunity to come and speak to yourselves. My name is Martin Fisher. I'm head of Northern Ireland with the Irish Legal Credit Unions, and I'm joined by my colleagues Marianne Cushley and Carmel Morris. And I suppose what we wanted to try and do was give you a bit of a flavour of the background to the credit union movement. Some of you may already be quite familiar with the movement and the services and the products that we provide in Northern Ireland. Some of you may not be quite as au fait. And so we're engaging with as many councils across Northern Ireland and the Northern Ireland Local Government Association earlier in the year in respect of just, I suppose, highlighting the important work that credit unions do in their communities throughout Northern Ireland and across the island of Ireland. So in terms of background to Northern Ireland credit union movement, they were first established in the 1950s and 60s. There was a high unemployment rate. Banks weren't lending without collateral on their homes, and then money lenders were charging exorbitant rates of interest. At that stage, the communities came together and they were a source of affordable, reasonable credit for ordinary people. And that's why they came together in that scenario. So the first credit union was established up in the Northwest in Northern Ireland, in the Northwest in October 1960. That's a credit union now with over £107 million in assets, with over 32,000 members and about 50 or 60 staff. In terms of the overall Northern Ireland credit union statistics, there's about 138 credit unions in Northern Ireland, 87 of which are affiliated to the Irish League of Credit Unions. That has dropped to 85 and is in the process of officially dropped to 85 due to a number of transfers of engagement within the Irish League of Credit Unions. There's approximately 38 with the Ulster Federation of Credit Unions, and then there's 13 that are independent. So the major one within that is probably the Harp and Crown Credit Union, which represents police and other civilian workers with that organisation. In total, there's about 614,500 adult credit union members in Northern Ireland and 105,000 juvenile depositors. So that's members who are depositors who are under the age of 16. Across Northern Ireland, we employ over 800 staff, and when you look at the kind of the demographics and the population penetration, approximately 38% of the population of Northern Ireland is a credit union member, and that's compared to 3% in the rest of the UK. And then on the island of Ireland, that's approximately 64% of the population is a credit union member. In terms of some statistics, total savings across the Northern Ireland movement are 1.71 billion. 1.58 billion of that is to credit unions affiliated to the Irish League. Total loans are in the region of 618 million, which is about a third of the personal unsecured lending market in Northern Ireland. And then we have total assets over 2 billion. And you see there, when based on asset size, Northern Ireland represents approximately 50% of all credit unions. That are in your local authority area. There's 11 credit unions that are in the Newry and Moreton area, which are affiliated to the Irish League credit unions. And as you can see, they represent approximately 80,000 members. They have £237 million in savings and £95 million in loans. There's then 14,000, nearly 15,000 of those are additional or juvenile depositors, and they employ 113 staff across the local authority area. So when we take the penetration rate, that's 44% of the population in your council area has a credit union account, and 52% if we include those two juvenile deposits. So we believe we've got a great many strengths, not least of which is our member loyalty, our reputation and trust. Our colleagues in the south of Ireland have just for the world record, and has never been done before in a global context, the eighth year of winning a consumer sentiment index in terms of the loyalty and the customer experience that the members and the credit unions provide. But we believe there's the skills and the staff and the volunteers provide is of really good quality, and there's skills there. There's a passion for the credit union ethos in terms of the mutual help amongst each other. We have a personal knowledge of our members and their needs. We have empathy and integrity to their situations. As a movement, in terms of our credit unions, we have good capital and solvency ratios. We have plenty of funds to lend. We have you know, based in our communities, where we have great community focus and local knowledge. And then, as I say, the customer experience, and which we believe is being strengthened through, you know, as I say, our colleagues in the South winning that top spot in across many years. And then once our surplus has been applied to members through the dividend or interest rebate, it's then paid out for social and cultural and charitable purposes agreed by the members. We believe there's some opportunities to expand our services in the credit union context. So there's, you know, one credit union and potentially maybe two credit unions looking at mortgages, although there's a very strict and onerous authorisation process to get through. But there's other opportunities in terms of lending to small businesses and community organisations. And as a result of COVID, the digital offering has improved along a lot of credit unions across Northern Ireland. You know, online services, online loan applications, online member onboarding, things like that. But we also think that the, you know, younger people like the credit union idea and the concept, and that cooperative basis upon which we were founded all those years ago. We contribute to our communities in a number of different areas, and Marianne has been working on a project at the moment across some of our credit unions, in which we hope to roll out to the rest of our credit unions in both jurisdictions in Northern Ireland and in the South, in respect of our social impact. So we kind of know anecdotally what our credit unions are doing, and they know what they're doing in their communities, but actually we need to try and get factual information on that. So we've developed toolkits to try and help them in this regard. So looking at the affordable lending that they provide to their communities, you know, so loans under £1,000, credit unions are the most affordable, and especially as interest rates rise in the current climate, credit unions are the most affordable for anything under £2,000 to £3,000. The support that we provide in our communities, the sponsorship, the opportunities in terms of youth and volunteers as well. So we're doing that, and we hope that we can then bring that across into have it on an all Northern Ireland basis. So during COVID-19, the executive designated us ourselves as essential service, and in all cases, credit unions, you know, played their part. They took up the mantle, and they continue to provide the services. Very few were closed. If any were closed during that time, they always tried to get the service up and running as fast as possible. And in very many cases, that was done by volunteers who tried to keep the doors open during those, especially during this initial period of the lockdowns. And we continue to play our part in contributing to the rebuilding and the recovery of the economy across Northern Ireland in the period that we're now coming into post COVID-19. But of course, we now have the cost of living and the impact of that. From our perspective, I suppose it's too early for us to draw conclusions from our statistics that we have, but we do have, you know, early indicators showing that there are problems and there are impacts for people across Northern Ireland. You know, the cost of living in general is reducing the access to affordable credit as lenders across financial services decline more loan applications because of the fact that it's becoming harder to assess loans, and people are obviously their income is being impacted in so many ways, and they're looking at prioritising what they have in that regard. But from a credit union perspective, we'll continue to do what we've always done, which is prioritise the needs of our members. You know, with households facing soaring costs for utilities, groceries and fuel, we'll do everything we can to support our members who are struggling. And that's whether providing access to that affordable credit or providing help and forbearance to individual borrowers who might be struggling to manage their repayments. I suppose what we have seen over the summer and continuing into the autumn is a smaller growth in savings, which we think is likely to be used with a combination of members using their savings to pay towards things like utilities and everyday items such as groceries and fuel, or that they just have less to save because they're spending those other that money in other areas, which has much of more of a focus. We understand there's to be a shift in demand, particularly from our credit unions in areas of higher deprivation, which has resulted in a rise in loan applications for smaller amounts, and the feedback from our credit unions that those have been taken to cover necessities such as household items or bills and other areas such as utilities and groceries. Demand for loans in a like-for-like period between June 21 and June 22 has risen across the movement in Northern Ireland, but the nature and the demand of those loans is shifting towards smaller loans, and that's, you know, it could be loans for £500 to pay for, particularly for oil and things like that. I suppose as a consequence, as I kind of said there before, that the difficulty is that's now becoming, because circumstances are changing from week to week and month to month and paycheck to paycheck, it's becoming increasingly difficult for credit unions to predict and change. What we're finding is that some of the affordable lenders are maybe removing themselves from the market or making, you know, declining more applications. And I suppose, as I say, credit unions will try and help their members and, you know, provide access to that affordable credit, but it can't be at the cost of people not being able to afford it. So then just, you know, a quote from one of our credit unions saying increasingly members are taking out loans to pay for household expenses like heating oil, coal and some other items that they would have traditionally been able to cover in their regular income, whether that's in wages or benefits. In terms of some of the other initiatives that we in the credit union movement do, we have a few resources that we provide to for education purposes and for young people. So we have a Clued In resource, which is a resource for secondary schools. And then for any of you with young kids and toddlers during COVID, you'll have become very familiar with Twinkle. And during COVID, we teamed up with Twinkle, who provide resources to teachers and parents in respect of all sorts of different activities for their kids. And we teamed up with them to offer them resources for mainly for primary school and toddlers in respect of trying to get them to understand the basics of savings and financial education in that respect. We then have other initiatives. We have our credit union art competition, which runs on a national basis, and then our schools quiz, which also runs on a national basis and has finals in Dublin. I suppose what I said, there's some of the strengths and what we're good at, but there's also some challenges for us, and challenges like there are for many volunteer organisations right across Northern Ireland. Like other volunteer organisations, we have a difficulty in attracting volunteers, mainly due to basically just time commitments and changes in society, as people find that they don't necessarily have the time to commit to something which can be at times very onerous, especially in terms of the increased regulation and compliance requirements. We're authorised and regulated by the Bank of England and PRA, and then we're also supervised by the Financial Conduct Authority. So, like, inevitably, like all of everything, there's just increased compliance every year in respect of how we protect our members' money. Savings was an issue during COVID, especially as the savings growth was growing faster than our loans. And while I suppose that was a welcome indication of trust and involvement with the credit union movement, it also meant that we have regulatory requirements, which mean that basically, you know, we have to put money aside for every pound that's invested and deposited with the credit union. An amount has to be set aside for capital and reserve purposes. The last decade, there's been a low return on surplus funds and investments, so credit unions can only get their income from one of two mechanisms, either investments or loans. And as I say, you know, it's been a difficult environment for credit unions to manage themselves through the last number of years. Bank charges, we're subject to bank charges, so we provide banking services, but inevitably some of them have to be provided by banks, and the banks charge the credit unions for access to the system. There was reduced loan demand over COVID, and that's, as I say in the previous slide, recovered. And then over the years, there has probably been a lack of loan book diversification, which is beginning to get better, and that's linked into those potential opportunities in relation to some credit unions looking at mortgages and I suppose different community lending aspects to organisations and social enterprises that operate within their communities. We also have an agent membership, and then we have competition with the likes of the internet banks and money lenders. And then as a movement, we're not necessarily homogeneous. So we have 85 different credit unions, that's 85 different boards of directors. And as you can imagine, that can be difficult at times. So what I then just wanted to touch on, and some of you may be aware of, was this concept of a mutual bank, which is being pushed by a group in Northern Ireland, mainly with reference to similar banks being looked at in Great Britain. It's still very much uncharted water. There's no banking licences being granted to any institution in the United Kingdom in this area. The Welsh government has backed the concept of a bank, but there was kind of issues with it in the lead up to Christmas last year, that that bank could only be formed by pegging back on the existing authorisation of a building society there, which illustrates the huge obstacles and difficulties in setting up any bank, even one with government finance and support. And it should also be noted that credit union membership in Wales is only 2%. And what I thought I would do is try and illustrate that by making it relevant for yourselves in the local authority area. So you see there that Newry Moran Down Council has 11 credit unions just in that area alone. Wales has 15 across the entire country. You have more members than Wales. You also have slightly more juvenile depositors. You have nearly five times as much insurers, and just over three times as many in loans. So I suppose what we are suggesting, that establishing any form of bank within the United Kingdom is going to be costly, it's going to be time consuming, and it's going to be unviable without major subsidies. And the question therefore needs to be asked, as we do with our members' money, whether such a project would be the best resource of the best use of public resources. Credit unions aren't commercial banks, but we do want to support a range of products and services that supports our community. So we're looking at the moment into green financing and green lending. We're looking into the possibility of SME and the community sectors, as I say, as well. In addition, there's already a range of mutual banks that are here in Northern Ireland, such as the Progressive Building Society, Nationwide, and the Leeds that are here. Credit unions do a huge amount of work in financial services in Northern Ireland on a daily basis, and most of it's unseen. And we do that alongside work with yourselves in the council, with the housing associations and with the advice agencies. And we do an immense amount of work with the Consumer Council as well, into trying to tackle issues like illegal payday lending and in the past move away people from payday lending by the likes of Provident and Wonga, as well as the illegal payday lenders. So I suppose what we're saying is that, the financial services landscape in Great Britain is completely different in many ways to that in Northern Ireland. And credit unions are anchor institutions, and they form part of the fabric of Northern Ireland financial services landscape in a way they just don't in the rest of Great Britain. So I suppose what we're saying is credit unions are an essential element of communities across Northern Ireland. We've identified strategic priorities to help and assist our increase our credit unions in the provision of the services and products that they provide to their members, and we would ask for support in those initiatives to fully utilise the considerable community presence that credit unions have developed over the last 60 years. The concept of a mutual bank or community bank was looked at in the Republic of Ireland in 2019, and that report concluded that there's no business case for the state to establish a public banking system in Ireland, supporting the outcome of a previous report. And then it went on to say that credit unions are considered to be the community bank with an increasing offering of financial products for their services. There's no business case for a community mutual bank to operate in Ireland, especially one with any state support. Rather, any support for the concept of a community bank should go directly towards credit union movement. What we believe is there are many important opportunities for collaboration and partnership to build upon the community wealth building, build upon the gaps that exist in the areas of banking services and financial exclusion across Northern Ireland, and our view is that credit unions are best placed to address some of those issues. To that extent, part of the basis for having this briefing was that earlier in the year we released our policy manifesto, and we've suggested that around three important pillars. So community wealth building, so we want to provide support for investment and lending for social purposes and partnerships with local authorities, filling the void left behind by banks and improving access to community financial services. Our credit union legislation is now almost 40 years old. 1985 was the last time it was it was, when it came into operation, it was reviewed in a very specific way back in 2016 to allow us to offer services to corporate members, so businesses, companies and partnerships and non-corporate associations. But there's a whole wide scale review that needs to take place. And at the moment, that review has taken place in Great Britain. Legislation is going through Parliament at the moment to give additional powers to credit unions in Great Britain. Unfortunately, because the legislation is devolved, that would have to take place at the Assembly level. And I suppose in terms of the third pillar, what we want to try and do is increasing financial well-being across Northern Ireland. So we want to combat financial exclusion. We want to help individuals to manage their finances. We want to continue to offer fair and affordable credit to all. Our interest rates are capped by law at 1% per month. And we've been also carrying out some payroll partnership pilots between a number of our credit unions in the public and private sectors in relation to payroll savings initiatives. And they seem to be going very well. And there was a report issued in September time that they were going very successful, and the financial resilience that the opportunity for employees to save is showing is immense, and what the report suggested was that even building up savings of up to £750 increases people's financial resilience and increases their mental health and well-being enormously. So we're looking to try and build that across Northern Ireland with various stakeholders. And then ultimately, we want to build a financial literacy and education to help people in their financial education. So that's it for myself, Chair, in respect of what I wanted to say today. I just have the credit union lending there. What makes us differently? Sometimes it's very difficult to try and explain what makes us different in terms of our lending. We have interest rates that are capped by law. Our credit unions offer flexibility to members. We have no fees attached with our loans. We have loan protection insurance, so in the event of someone passing away, in most cases, subject to the terms and conditions, the loan is paid off, so providing that extra little bit of assurance to family members. And then we have this sometimes difficult concept to try and market, that we have loan interest rebate, and I suppose it depends on the nature of the credit union and how well it's done during the year. But if you've taken out a loan, you may well get a declaration by the credit union that it's declared a loan interest rebate, and you may get a rebate on some of the interest you paid throughout that year. So I'll end it now, Chair, and apologies if I've gone over in time. But I suppose from ourselves, we're very thankful for the opportunity to have this opportunity to speak with yourselves, and we're happy to answer any questions.
No problem, Martin. Thank you very much for that presentation. And before handing over to the members, I'd like to thank yourselves to Marianne Carvel and all for coming along to make a very informative presentation to members here in the Chamber and online at home. Credit unions, as we all know, have been around for a very long time and are familiar landmarks and institutions in our towns and villages, and the wide range of services on offer to so many who avail them. Very much appreciated. And I'm now going to hand over to members for a few questions. I see Councillor Enright is in the chat. He's got two questions at the minute. Well, we'll give you a start on the first one and we'll see how you go. So Councillor Enright, I'll hand over to your good self.
Thanks, Chairperson. I have two questions, one small one, one big one. It's very difficult for community organisations, residents associations and the like, to get bank accounts set up these days. And the banks are mostly refusing to do that. And for some reason, I don't think it's just a local thing in the Downpatrick area. Most credit unions don't seem to accept community organisations having accounts, even though they're always in credit. You know, when you're with a bank, you can't run an overdraft as a community organisation. So I'm just wondering when community organisations would be allowed to open accounts. That's the first question. And then the second question is the practice of having to put credit unions' own assets on deposit with other banks really seems terribly wasteful. And I know that we have to stick by the rules, but it would seem to make an awful lot more sense if credit unions could invest in stable assets with much better rates of return, so they could serve their community better. I mean, the sort of examples I would give there would be maybe social housing, affordable housing, that sort of thing. Because the return you get from depositing with banks is dreadful, and you know, you should be allowed to get a better return. So there's my two questions, Chair.
Dead on, good Logan, thanks so much. So I'll hand over to our guests to reply to those two questions. If any of our members have any questions or comments, please don't hesitate to put your C or your Q in the chat box and we'll get around to you as soon as we can. So I'll hand back to you, Martin, Carmel, and Marianne. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I suppose in response to the first question, Councillor Enright, each credit union can accept corporate members, so that would include, you know, residents' associations and community associations. They've been able to do so since about 2017, but there's been a very slow uptake in the credit unions doing it, mainly because it's a much more difficult a new way of doing things. And so the credit unions that have been doing it have been probably much bigger and able to have the compliance and the regulatory requirements and understand things. I think if you're in a situation like that, go and have the conversation with the credit union, and as necessary, you know, we're from an Irish League of Credit Unions perspective as a trade and representative body, happy to support the credit union in some of those. But it can be a difficult process for those credit unions in terms of just getting all the paperwork together and understanding the governing document and things like that. So some of the credit unions have been kind of very reluctant to do that. And at the moment, it's very much potluck on where you are as to which credit union is adopting that situation. But from our perspective as a trade and representative body, we want to ideally, I suppose, be in a position to lift all those as a rising tide and lift those credit unions in a position where they do have the understanding and can comply with all the regulatory requirements around that. It's probably taking a bit longer than we would have envisaged, and COVID and kind of priorities in that respect has probably taken a bit of a backseat in that regard. And then I suppose on the second point, yes, we do have to comply with the regulatory requirements. There is a consultation paper out at the moment which is looking to try and expand the investment opportunities for credit unions, and it will provide some opportunities for credit unions to look into other areas such as more ethical investments and things like that. The social housing side of things is an interesting topic. Our colleagues in the South have been able to persuade the regulator and the legislation there to change, and they do have a scheme up at the moment where credit unions are investing into, and the intention is that could provide up to £400 million for social housing in the Republic of Ireland. We have been pushing various departments in Northern Ireland. We've also been pushing our regulator in London on the idea of social investment and even local authorities funding, so bringing together a pot of money and lending it to housing providers or a local authority. And it's a bit more difficult because in a Northern Ireland context, it has to be done on a United Kingdom-wide basis. But there's a great difficulty in trying to persuade the regulators in London, because it's difficult for them to understand the concept, because credit unions in Northern Ireland have these surplus funds and we want to help our communities, versus credit unions in Great Britain very much receive a lot of the grant funding from local authorities. So we're trying to face mistruths and misunderstandings in that respect. We have been successful in the last year in persuading the Department for Communities, as part of their housing supply strategy, that there is a role for credit unions in this area. And as part of their draft housing supply strategy, they did acknowledge that credit union funding was something that could be done. The unfortunate as my understanding is that that wasn't signed off because there was an absence of the Northern Ireland executive. So that strategy is still in draft format at this point in time. We're stuck between a rock and a hard place in terms of on the one hand, the Department of Communities appears to be open to that prospect, but we need to persuade the regulators to change the rules around that. And as part of our submission in the coming weeks, we'll be suggesting that social housing should be included within that as well. And I see you've just put a comment, Councillor, in the chat there. We're happy to share that with you as well. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Martin, for answering Councillor Enright's questions. We have another couple of counters. We've indicated I'm handing over to Councillor Gareth Sharvin first, and then Councillor Murray. Gareth, go ahead there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair, and thank you, folks. I suppose the SDLP have a long history with the credit union, particularly from the late John Hume's days of opening the first credit union in Derry in the north. And he stated before he passed that it was one of the proudest things he ever did. So certainly, and I'm not saying my nanny's at the same level as John Hume, but she was a religious credit union member as well, that encouraged all of us to be part of the movement. You know, I just want to touch on some of the real benefits of the credit union, you know, and a lot of people aren't aware of these, you know, about the death benefit insurance, you know, if someone does die, obviously there's T's and C's with it, but they get the £1,500 if they're a member, and as long as they have the minimum amount. And then obviously the life savings insurance as well, you know, that covers it at different levels. And I think that's really an important thing that your normal bank wouldn't necessarily offer or provide, which shows the credit union has the community at heart. But what my question was, and I don't know if you dived into it, Martin, you had about opportunities and about mortgages. And obviously at the moment within the mortgage market, it's a world of flux. And if you're like me and your fixed term ends in the next couple of months and you're a bit nervous, you're looking at it every day to see what changes. But I'm aware that other credit unions, not in the north, across the UK and Ireland, do provide mortgages. So is it the intentions of yourselves that mortgages will come to the credit unions in the north?
Thanks. We can maybe get you on board, Councillor Sharvin, for some of those benefits that you're showing to start. I suppose to those credit unions in GB who have provide mortgages, they've been grandfathered across their legacy authorizations. So the majority of those who offer mortgages are industrial credit unions, so they're employer credit unions. So the likes of I think it's Glasgow Credit Union, and there's a Copperpot, which is the police one. So they didn't have to go through this new process of getting authorization, which is an extremely high hurdle. The regulators have kind of just said, well, you're doing it anyway, we'll give you that authorization. And they're in a slightly different situation in that their relationship is directly at, they're getting the money deposited at source as part of the payroll savings. So it's slightly different and better situation in those terms. We only have one industrial credit union up here in Teachers Credit Union. And they are working as part of that initiative with the Money and Pension Service in terms of with organisations like some of the local colleges and things like that. And I think there's an expectation to move that out into other colleges and Education Authority and CCEA and things like that. In the south, again, they can provide mortgages automatically, so they don't need to apply for this authorisation. And we're stuck in the middle here where for any credit union that hasn't got the existing authorisation and none do in Northern Ireland, they need to go through a very hefty and exhaustive authorisation process, as you would expect, because, you know, it's the biggest purchase that you commit to in your life. So there's all sorts of, you know, issues that everyone needs to be on top of and make sure that there's no detriment to the members. And even if you get all your I's and T's dotted, it can take 12 to 18 months to get authorization. If you, you know, press the button today, it would be potentially towards the end of 2023 that credit union would have authorization. As I say, only at the moment, there's only one or two who are looking at it. And I think, to be honest with you, it's probably only going to be any of those bigger credit unions who would have the ability and the capacity in terms of the resources to offer it. But it is part, we do have a strategy document at the moment to try and look at if there are potential solutions or options for working with someone else, another provider in that area. So we're the one at the moment doing it at the moment, but we I wouldn't say no, but we're looking at, we are aware that it isn't possible for a lot of the smaller credit unions, and if that isn't the case, then maybe there's another solution, but we don't actually know what that is at the moment. But as part of our strategy, we're looking at potential. We need to work that out first.
Okay. And just a follow-up question there, Martin. You know, you touched on yourself about the cost of living, and people are struggling to pay bills, and the demand for your loans is ever increasing. Is there a dedicated team within the credit union where someone is in financial difficulties that they can reach out to, or is it the person within the credit union branch themselves that that person should go to? What's
mechanism? We have as a trade and representative body, so we do have, we've resources on our website there to for people to look at and to go to resources all around Northern Ireland, either at a regional level or at a more local level. I suppose the difficulty is going back to that point in terms of there are 85 different boards of directors, 85 different loans officers, 85 different organisations. So, and they're all each individually responsible for their own loans policy and how they communicate with it. But we, going back to that first point in terms of the cost of living, we would always encourage our members, go and have that conversation with the credit union, because the credit union would much rather be in a position where you're having a discussion with them to try and figure out what forbearance they might be able to offer, rather than being in a situation where, which is sometimes becoming the norm, where an IVA has been entered into, and then the credit union has to make a decision whether to accept it or reject it, and by that stage it might be too late. So there's very often things that the credit union can do in terms of looking at whether it might be able to take on a couple of more of those loans and make one payment in totality. So I would always encourage members to try and have that first conversation directly with their credit union. And each credit union, we're giving evidence to the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee next week, and we were gathering some information in terms of the forbearance measures that credit unions are taking. And it really, in as much as we had five or six different options, each credit union was saying back to us that they offer, you know, it depends on the particular circumstances of each of the members. So just Marianne's got her hand up there.
Thanks for her
coming.
Ed, Marianne.
It's maybe just to add to what Martin had said there in relation to the autonomy that credit unions have. And, you know, what we've seen over the last 60 years as credit unions have evolved in Northern Ireland is that they have grown based on the needs of the members within their local area. And you'll see a real correlation there in terms of areas of high deprivation. Some of our largest credit unions in Northern Ireland are there, and they're there for a very good reason. So as Martin had said, you know, every credit union as a standard wants you to come in and talk to them and take that first step and engage with the credit union to see what they can do to help. But what we find in our anecdotal evidence and in talking to credit unions is they're taking different approaches, and it's based on what their members need in the local community. So you will have some who have introduced, for example, emergency loans or very low rate interest home heating loans, because that's been something that they felt that their members could benefit from. Mm-hmm. You'll have others who have strong engagements with local advice agencies because they feel that their members have a need there and they want to be able to refer them on to get the best advice possible. So there is a real range there. In some ways it's a bit more challenging for us in terms of representing them because they're approaching things in a different way. But we always have to be cognizant of the fact that it's because they're trying to do what it is that their members, what they're hearing from their members that they need, and to kind of respond to that as best they can.
And I suppose under that, I talked about that social impact project that we're doing, we have very early information from one of the areas, it's just, which we call our chapter, which is kind of South Derry, kind of South Antrim, is that amongst those, that cluster of credit unions, in the last year, they issued more than 10,000 loans under £1,000. So when you think about the fact that what we said there earlier, most banks or financial institutions aren't really offering those types of loans at very low levels of interest. You know, they say something's 4% or 5%, but actually when you go in and actually apply for the loan, it gets increasingly higher. So I suppose from the credit union perspective, that's 10,000 loans being provided to 10,000 families, 10,000 people across that region at affordable levels of credit, which might otherwise have had to go to payday lenders or you know, potentially illegal methods in that respect. So that's why we see the value in that, in terms of that aggregation of information that we can provide, both credit unions can provide directly to their members as part of their corporate social responsibility, but also on a Northern Ireland level that we're engaging with the likes of yourselves or other stakeholders, we can evidence the support that credit unions are providing across Northern Ireland.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much for that. Thanks. Thanks.
Garth, I hope you found that all helpful. It is very important. We're learning a lot tonight so far from the representatives. So, Councillor Murray, Barra, you've been waiting patiently there. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And thanks to Martin and Marianne and Carmel for the presentation tonight, folks. And I've been a member of the credit union all my life, as my children are and my wife is, here in South Armagh, between Newtown Hamilton and Cross MacLean Credit Union. Been a permanent fixture in our lives, for the good, must be said, and buying first cars and taking out loans at different times and just putting away savings and that. So look, we all know the benefits of the credit union in South Armagh. Just, Marianne, you just touched on a point that I was going to make. In Cross MacLean Credit Union, in the last couple of weeks, they've put out a leaflet offering a 0% loan of up to £1,000 for home heating oil, which is £20 a week repayments for a year, which is a massive, massive incentive for people in this cost of living crisis, that for the thought of repaying £20 a week is a massive difference from having to gather up £1,000 before Christmas to get home heating oil. And it's one that we've been pushing out of our office in Cross MacLean. And it's just, I suppose, on behalf of the Sinn Féin team, just to thank you all for the work that's being done, and full credit to the credit union, and just to keep our lid. Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, I'll let you reply to that. Sorry about that.
No, you're okay. I was just going to say, you're probably not the only one who's heartwarmed to hear. I know certainly us, you know, as the trade and representative body, hearing some of the things that credit unions are doing on the ground themselves to try and help people. And that is ultimately what it's about. You know, there's obviously a 0% loan actually costs the credit union money in terms of the administration of that and, you know, the running costs of just keeping everything going. But it's not about that for them. It's about genuinely trying to step in and help people, especially at this time of year. You know, even this week, the weather's changed again, and I'm sure people are questioning whether they should put the heating on. So being able to see things like that it's a real reassurance to see the value that credit unions can bring. But again, really just to say, in terms of credit unions, that's what they're there to do. And they're all very much committed to seeing how they can help local communities and the different things that they can bring and forward, even, and initiatives they can share.
Even we from one credit union, now it's in Belfast, but it's a very highly deprived area in Belfast. We were told a couple of months ago that they had noticed that certain members, and particularly pensioners, were coming in and withdrawing very, very small amounts of money. And they started asking questions what these small amounts of money were for. They were to buy milk and bread. And what the members of staff have done is they've got their own little kitty there now, where they lend someone £2 or £3 to go and get a loaf of bread or go and get a milk. So, you know, it's a very small indicator of how difficult the situation is out there for many people.
Dead on. Barry, I hope that helps your wee query that you raised about the credit unions. Again, hearing it firsthand, especially that story that you've told us, Martin, about the wee pensioners and all, you know, coming in and probably a fiver or a tenner to see them through from there too. And I think it's a commendable gesture what the staff have done there by helping them out, you know. And today's society, that's a very sad indictment on the way things have ended up. Thank you. Declan, Councillor Declan McAteer, go ahead, Declan.
Thank you, Terry. Yeah, and thank you, Martin, Marianne and Carmel, again for your contribution tonight. And I know, I suppose as interest rates are starting to go through that cyclical rise again over probably the next 5 to 10 years, the credit unions are going to probably come back into even more focus again than they have been in the period of low interest rates. There's something just funny, you did touch on the mortgages there, and you could see the very obvious, difficulty there is around mortgages, and I think some of the credit unions in the South did get sort of into bother back 2008, I think, at 9, in terms of some of the mortgages. But just something I'd just love to bring to your attention, maybe part of your considerations, that a lot of the rural dwellings on farms, young people coming to build houses now have difficulty with the current banking system and are willing to lend money for single bills, self bills. And I know I had to send somebody to an agent in England to get a self bill loan because they weren't worth coming. And the particular people there wasn't a financial issue at all with them. But and I think there's been quite a number of this, and when you go actually to try and find from banks why they're not lending to this, they go into denial and say, oh, well, but we are, and then hide behind the veil of privacy, etc. So it's something that I feel very strongly about, and I appreciate it's not easy to get into that bar, as you talked about, you know, to be able to go into that level of lending. But I do think it's a very much a rural community. It's another identifiable community. And I know there is a big market out there and a need for that type of loan, which people are having difficulties with. So maybe you consider looking at that in some way or other. It can be complicated in terms of, a lot of it down to rights of way, and I think this is what scares the banks off. And I could see the credit union as more of a community-based organisation, you know, that understands people, understands rural areas, understands the way our community works. So I would just like to bring that to your attention and maybe see there could be some movement on that in the future or even in the near future.
All right, Declan, thanks very much for your contribution. I'll hand over to Barton.
Absolutely, Councillor McTeer. So, yeah, that I suppose that forms part of that strategy that we're looking at. So, to the extent that some of those rural credit unions might be smaller and might not have the capacity and to want to do that, is there another solution there that they can feed into that process? So, it's definitely something that is that we're aware of and that we will endeavour to look at.
Dylan Martin, thank you very much. I don't see any more members in the chamber or online or in the meeting chat who have indicated. Councillor Hills indicated she's leaving to go to another meeting. Thanks, Rosie, for letting us know. And since I don't see any other members indicating in chamber or online, I see Councillor Enright has another point made in the chat. I'm sure that can be dealt with. At this juncture, I'd like to thank everybody, and particularly yourselves, for coming along tonight and presenting this. And we've got a lot more information and background to what your credit union movement is about. And it's very, very, very helpful, especially, as I said in my opening remarks, over so many years of service to the communities right across the district and beyond. And I'm sure the presentation that you used tonight, maybe it could be sent to Sarah at Democratic Services and circulated to members. So I'd like to thank you very much again, everybody, for turning up, and to the officers at Sarah and the Mall and working hard to facilitate and getting this meeting organised. So to members of the Chamber, safe onward journey, and to those at home, thanks for coming along, and I'll see you all being well. So that's all from Downpatrick. See you later. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks very
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Bye.
All the best.
Bye.
Thank you.
There you are.